This question writes, I have heard according to Theravadan Buddhist teachings, we are born and die at every moment, and we do this continuously, not only after our final breath. Could you please explain what this means? There is the understanding in Theravadan Buddhism that birth and death is a physical phenomenon. You die and then you're reborn again. As you allude to in your question, there's also the understanding that this sense of self that we experience ourselves to be is an ongoing process that happens continually. You can see in the Buddha's teachings on the links of dependent origination that there's craving, and then there's grasping, and then there's becoming, and then there's birth, and then there's old age, sickness, and death, and so the process goes. And the encouragement from a practice perspective is not just to believe in the Buddha's teachings on karma and rebirth, also to investigate and see what do we feel ourselves to be in any given moment, to be willing, and I would say it does take some degree of daring, to turn attention around instead of following the momentum of being somebody, going somewhere, doing something to get something, to inquire inwards, questioning of who is this here. The conceptual approach is, as I explained there, that clinging gives rise to becoming, gives rise to birth. And this is a process that we're encouraged to look into, not just to think about, not just to speculate. And a philosophical an argument in favor of the Buddha's teachings on karma and rebirth is nowhere near enough. It needs to be something much more subtle. So once again, the encouragement is to hone down our skills in applying the spiritual faculties, faith and true principles, energy, embodied mindfulness, collectedness, discernment, the five spiritual faculties, and ask the right questions at the right time in the right way that addresses this process skillfully. Again, to emphasize, this is not an intellectual argument that you need to agree with or disagree with, rather to take on board the possibility that this apparent sense of self is not as substantial as we might like to think or feel it to be. The image I have often given is that of a rainbow. And it looks like a solid, substantial thing, though when you get closer, it disappears. And if you study it and learn about it, then you maybe come to appreciate that it's an apparent reality that results from the refraction of light through water particles. Well, if we have an inquiring sort of mind and we're interested in who and what this sense of I really is, because surely it causes us a lot of trouble. And for all the fun that I have and the good ideas that I have and the aspirations that I have, there are also lots of disappointments that I have and frustrations that I have. This I can be really burdensome. And instead of just distracting ourselves from this experience, the invitation is to inquire into it. What is this? Who is this? And that formulation can be a skillful way of inquiring. If you have a degree of relative calm and peacefulness, there's not a lot happening. There's still knowing happening, there's still awareness. So gently drop in the question, who is watching? And feeling how it feels as we ask that question, feeling in our heart and our belly as we ask that question, who is watching? Who knows? Or if you have a quandary that you're contemplating, like, should I do this or should I do that? there is the possibility of following the options and end up thinking so much that you get a headache, or there's the alternative of not following that movement out, rather turning attention around and looking inwards and asking the question, who wants to know the right thing to do? We're not denying that there might be a right decision. Rather, we're factoring in that this I that I suppose myself to be, that I assume is a source of some sort of security, may not be as substantial and as solid and reliable as I and most people think it is. So inquiring into this sense of self, who am I? What am I? Who is walking meditation? Or a really good approach might be to ask, who is asking these questions? If such an inquiry is appealing to you, then I would encourage going about it in a very careful manner. Like, ask these questions in a manner as if you're asking your respected teacher. Of course, you are asking your teacher, which is your own heart. If we go about it in an overly assertive way, we can cause stress. Also on this theme, it can be useful to look into the views that we have about the sense of self. How these days, it wouldn't be inaccurate to talk about the age of self-adoration. I'm 73 this year, and I can think back in different times when the self-promotion that is so prevalent these days used to be seen as vulgar. For some people, that would seem as old-fashioned and the result of unfortunate religious conditioning. Though if we look at all this self-promotion and self-development and self-improvement, does it seem to be resulting in increased harmony within the individuals and increased cooperation and contentment in society? I would think it's the opposite, and there are causes for this. We're not born with a ready established sense of self. Up until a certain age, children look into a mirror and they don't see the image as a reflection of themselves. The perception of being an I isn't there. It takes several years before the perception of I is adequately configured. And then the unfortunate thing that happens is that we perceive this sense of I to be a source of security as our true identity. Up until relatively recently in human history, religion attempted in various ways to address the risk of being self-obsessed. And the sense of self is not a solid, substantial thing. It's a process, it's a dynamic, it's an activity. And if we identify as it, then we identify as something inherently insecure and unstable. And we make a mistake by thinking that this apparent reality is going to give us security. So as I was saying, religion used to be the means by which the risks of becoming self-centered, self-obsessed were managed, and people lived their lives in relationship to that which they believed was inherently stable, the Almighty, Almighty God, or Almighty Yahweh, or Almighty Brahma, or if you're a Buddhist, then the Dhamma. And belief in that which is considered to be inherently stable relativized the importance of the sense of self. People still manage to get around and behave pretty abominably at sometimes. However, they weren't in a perpetual state of anxiety, as so many people are these days. returning then to your question about this process of birth and death happening throughout our lifetimes, yes, that's a view that Theravadan Buddhists are invited to take on board, to see that the sense of self is a process that's happening as a result of our relationship to experience. When pleasure arises, we cling to it, there's a sense of I am happy. When pain arises, we cling to it, we create suffering in so doing, and then the perception of I am unhappy. And so we have a community of selves, not a single self. And if this process has gone well enough, then these various selves are in a state of a relative degree of cooperation. And so yes, there is the invitation to reflect on that. Also, there's the invitation to reflect on the teachings of anatta, of this apparent self, atta, is actually anatta. And don't think that this is just a philosophical argument that you need to be convinced of, or you're not a proper Buddhist. It's an invitation to inquire into who is practicing meditation, who is obsessed with always criticizing themselves, who feels afraid. We're not asking this question to get rid of this apparent sense of I, rather to come into a conscious relationship with this apparent sense of I. And then, as I was just saying, also to look at the society's view on the sense of I, the sense of self, to see how it's morphed, particularly over the last century. So thank you very much for your question, and I hope that that's at least to some degree helpful.